Yeah, to be more precise, the work I did, and I work a little different things, but yeah. As I said, I'm a PhD student in Weizmann Institute under the supervision of Pierre Bloom, and today we'll talk about my first paper, let's say, which is about the interplay between fuzzy dark matter and what it can tell us about the H-naught gravitational lensing measurement. Now, when we talk about the fuzzy dark matter, we talk about the range of dark matter that is really on the low end that is allowed. Nowadays, we live in this maybe unfortunate situation where basically we have a huge mass range that we can use in order to pinpoint a dark matter candidate that works, meaning a dark matter candidate that solves the problem that we see in astrophysics, for example, in the very large scales when we look at the CMB or we look at the BAO, we need the dark matter, or with more intermediate scales, at the cluster scale, we need dark matter to explain gravitational lensing and the always missing mass. And also the most famous at even smaller scales, at the galactic scale, we need dark matter or seems to be some missing matter to explain the rotation curves of galaxies. Unfortunately, dark matter candidate that works in the context of the Lambda CDM model, which is the model that is preferred, it doesn't really tell us what is the mass, and we can search in this huge range of masses. And when you see this huge range of masses, which is almost 80 orders of magnitude, it might be even surprising that we can set some limits at all in the low end and in the high end. And this is possible because these low-end limits and high-end limits, they really come from gravity. For example, in the high-end limits from primordial black holes, if they are too heavy, they will just do too much microlensing, gravitational phenomena that we will see. In the case of fuzzy dark matter, since we are talking about dark matter candidates, this wave behavior, with behavior that is relevant in astrophysical scales, we'll have this impact on astrophysics on gravity. So it's interesting to study this fuzzy dark matter candidate because really gravity, which is the thing we need dark matter for in the end, can really tell us something, can constrain things regarding it. Now, what are these effects of fuzzy dark matter that we are talking about? There are basically two effects, two particularities of fuzzy dark matter different with respect to normal collisionless cold dark matter. And I think this snapshot, which has come from a simulation, cosmological simulation of fuzzy dark matter, really summarizes it well because you see that you have this so-called interference wave behavior, this granular behavior that you would not normally have, really due to the wave nature of the dark matter, and the presence in the inner part of a cored profile, which is basically the ground state of the ultra-high dark matter, which is called, in this context, the soliton. So there are these two effects of the fuzzy dark matter that really differentiate it with respect to other collisions called dark matter candidate. And because of these effects, you can have constraints coming, for example, from Lyman alpha forest, because this fuzzy dark matter basically reduces the smallest the power in the power spectrum on the small scales. And you have a lot of other probes that you can use. One is, for example, dynamical heating of stars coming from this wave interference behavior. And here I show also an effect coming from galaxy rotation curves. This is mostly coming from the presence of a core that changes how the rotation curve of a galaxy looks like. But what I would like to focus on this talk is on a particular gravitational probe, which is gravitational lensing. Now, there are two, let's say, one way to probe this fuzzy dark matter with gravitational lensing is by the so-called gravitational lensing anomalies, because it just so happens that because of this interference behavior, you form these granules that are like substructures that you can hope to see with gravitational lensing or hope to constrain if you don't see images changes coming from this behavior. But what I want to focus on today is instead of what fuzzy dark matter can tell us regarding the time delays. In particular, what these cores that are supposed to form from in this paradigm can tell us or how can they influence time delays. And time delays are the typical gravitational lensing phenomena that enters into the measurement of H naught coming from strong gravitational lensing. So the outline of the talk is as follows. I will try to remind you what is the soliton and the fuzzy dark matter and why we form this core and why do we care, and then try to connect it with the measurement of H naught. So I will also talk a bit about the H naught tension and what is the gravitational lensing measurement of this H naught tension coming from the TD Cosmo collaboration. And then I will try to discuss how this fuzzy dark matter can influence this this measurement and how it can be relevant. And possibly, maybe I can try to convince you that this discussion is meaningful regardless of what you think about the H-naught tension, because once one studies this, the influence of time delays in coming from fuzzy dark matter, if you suppose that tomorrow you actually know what is H-naught because, I don't know, they find some mistake on the cephids or whatever, then you can really use the prior on H-naught to really say something meaningful about profiles of galaxy and also try to understand if you can put constraints on fuzzy dark matter coming from it. So again, as I said, this the most important feature of fuzzy dark matter is that you have since you have a so small mass, you have a De Broglie wavelength that is relevant on astrophysical scale. For example, for some reference value for a mass of 10 to the minus 20 electron volt and for a typical velocity on galactic halos of 100 kilometers per second. And if you prefer, since we are in Canada, maybe kilomiles per second, or the one is the same. And we have really a De Broglie wavelength which is parsec, so it's really relevant for astrophysical scales. And this feature tells you, maybe also from an intuitive point of view, why when we have this so small mass dark matter candidate, we can describe this dark matter candidate as basically a wave. It's really also called wave dark matter. This comes from the fact that because of this small mass, you have a huge occupation number coming from from fuzzy dark matter, meaning that you can basically describe this system as a classical system. You can neglect the quantum phenomena. And also because of this wave behavior, you can maybe also understand why there is this formation of cores or why there is this suppression of small scales power spectrum. It's just because if you want from some sort of uncertainty principle, right? Because if you think about squeezing too much mass in a little volume, because of uncertainty principle, you cannot really know what is the velocity, and then this causes like some sort of pressure, which is in this context called quantum pressure that counteracts gravitational collapse, hence forming this course, or hence forming this small case suppression power spectrum that we here show. So when we discuss this fuzzy dark matter, we can just describe it in a non-relativistic classical field, and solve this Schrödinger-Poisson equation, or just a Schrödinger equation, coupled with the gravitational field, which is sourced by the same Schrödinger equation, which is a non-linear system because of the Poisson equation. And from this, you can see what are the solitons. The solitons are or these chord profiles are just the ground state solution of this Schrödinger-Poisson system, which you can easily find in this way. And you end up with these two equations. And then once you can solve to this equation to find your profile. For example, here it's shown the profile of this the soliton, this black line. And in this other dots are the results of some simulation of fuzzy dark matter that or cosmological or coming from toy conditions, and where they try to fit the density profile they find. And basically all the simulations that we know of, and maybe they should, in the inner part, they mostly find the soliton profile to be a very well fit for the density profile that they find. Meaning that this if you want, is a very simple. Okay, good. So this is a very simple set of equations, despite their simplicity, the result we see it in all the kind of simulation that they have all the kind of complication, like cosmological or coming from whatnot initial conditions. Okay, but how do we connect this with gravitational lensing, with the gravitational lensing measurement in general? Before going to that, maybe a little review, maybe not requested, about the H-naught tension. As you know, we have attention about so-called early measurement of the Hubble constant, most notably coming from the CMB electrical structures, and the one coming from late time, meaning they rely on late time physics, most notably coming from distance ladder, and most notably coming from the Schuss collaboration. As of now, this tension reached almost 5 sigma tension, and also possibilities to resolve this tension by some systematics on the Schuss, from the Schuss collaboration, using, for example, results from JWST. They give negative results. This tension seems to be there. We still don't know. There's a lot of debate on the community, but as of now, the tension is there. And in order to maybe settle down to understand if really we're talking about systematics or really we're talking about new physics that we have to introduce in our modeling, it's important maybe to have also other independent sort of measurement. And gravitational lensing is an independent late time measurement. In this plot, the strong gravitational lensing time measurement that I will also try to focus on this talk is the ones that I showed here with rectangles. And maybe as you can see, there are three measurements coming from the, if you want, three measurements coming from the same collaboration, which is the TD Cosmo. Now, why three, and what is the difference between them? The one which is seem to reinforce the tension and which has the smallest error bars, the coming from TD Cosmo 1 here in red. It's a measurement that was quoted at the beginning of this collaboration with TD Cosmo measurement, and what they did, they tried to use 7 different gravitational lens systems and fit a single H-naught for all of them. In general, with gravitational lensing, you can measure H-naught by using one single gravitational lens lensing system. For example, here there are these 7 lensing systems, and you can measure H-naught coming from them singularly. But of course, you obtain some error bars that are pretty big. So the idea is to just unite this the modeling for this 7 lenses and then fit for a single Hubble constant. In the end, you expect one single Hubble constant to be there. But the problem is that with this measurement, they kind of broke a degeneracy that is present in the modeling by assuming a specific density profile for the lens. We will see the details afterwards and why this caused this. But just for now, what they assume is that the density profile of your galaxy lens will be composed by stars plus Navarro-Frank white, meaning just collision and cold dark matter. The moment they allowed for much more freedom in the lensing modeling, and I will discuss afterwards what is this much more freedom, you see you arrive at this other result, which they call the TD Cosmo free mass profile. And you see that the error bars now become too big to really resolve the tension. So as of now, the gravitational lensing measurement cannot really resolve the tension, despite earlier claims in 2019, I think. And this is really because of this assumption of the profile and this change to this free mass profile. But what I would like to maybe to explain or to think about is what does it mean, free mass profile? I mean, here they try to fit the galaxy with stars, which is something that we can see. And then we know that we have cold dark matter, and they just try to fit it with Navarro-Frank white. What does it mean to be free? What does it mean to enlarge this mass profile? Does it even make sense? This is what I would like to also discuss, and I would like to understand what maybe fuzzy dark matter can enter into this picture. So again, before going to that, let's review how you measure H-naught from time delays very fast. You know that from gravitational lensing, you usually have this kind of picture where you have like a background source. In all the systems that we'll discuss, the background source will be quasar. The light coming from this background source will occur deviation because of this gravitational lensing phenomena coming from intervening mass. In our example, the lens, which is this intervening mass, will be a large elliptical galaxy. in all these 3D Cosmos systems, this the deflector, the lens, is an elliptical galaxy, a massive elliptical galaxy. And then what you can hope to do, you see, of course, an image in the sky of the source, which is lensed, which is multiple images, and so on and so forth. And you can try to, if you have a model, you can try to understand what is the mass of the deflector. Because the deflection angle, the one that you can try to fit for whenever you see an image, depends on the gravitational potential coming from the lens itself, meaning that it depends on the density profile. In general, in gravitational lensing, but I will say also in astrophysics, you care about not the 3D density profile, you care about the projected density profile. And in the context of gravitational lensing, this projected density profile is called the convergence that will be denoted by this kappa. This is the only thing I will tell about the formalism of gravitational lensing, because it's something that we'll need to understand the following. Now, once you have you understand what is this alpha, meaning you have some lens model that can fit your image well, in order to, if you want to recover H naught from this, when you look at just this the lens equation, or you just look at an image, you're just looking at angles, which is something dimensionless, so you cannot really hope to get H naught, which is dimensionful. But luckily for us, gravitational lensing system gives us time delays, which is a dimensionful quantity. What are time delays? Basically, it just so happens that light that comes from the same source but different images travels along different geodesic. And just because it travels along different geodesic, the light path is different, both from a geometrical point of view, but also because it undercomes Shapiro time delay effect. Here, like, we have an image that maybe shows this this time delays in action. Here you have basically an image of the magnitude of different images coming from the same source. This is a quad system, so you have four images. And you can see, if you look at the variation of the intensity of the light in years, as you can see from here, like many years, you can see they are kind of correlated. And this is expected because if they come from the same source, right? And from they are correlated, but they arrive, the variation, at different times of the order of months for this system. Here, maybe in this spot you cannot see, but if you maybe you look carefully, you can see that some dips arrive at a later time or earlier time for different images. Since it's of the order of months and this is of the order of years, you don't really see. But this is how you can measure time delays. And once you have time delays, you know that from gravitational lensing theory, that time delays are proportional to 1 over H naught, where this proportionality constant you can recover from the lens model that you hopefully found before by fitting for the image that you see in the sky. So that's it, right? That seems easy, but unfortunately there's the devil lies in this proportionality constant, because unfortunately we have a degeneracy that enters into this problem, which is called the mass sheet degeneracy, which relies on the fact that the source position of the mass of the galaxies are actually unknown. What is this mass sheet degeneracy? Well, suppose you have one model that I represent here with these schematic pictures, with a certain source position and with a certain convergence that then tells you the deflection angle. This model works perfectly well to fit your image. Okay, then you measure your time delays and you can recover your H naught from this model. You can think, unfortunately, of a second model where you scale the source position, which here is called beta, by a factor that that here I call lambda. You rescale the original model by the same factor lambda, plus you add to this to the convergence of this model a constant factor whose physical interpretation is really a mass sheet on the gravitational lens. That's why this degeneracy is called mass sheet degeneracy. It happens that this second model describes the image that you see in the sky as well as the first model. It's like if you do this transformation, this is an exact degeneracy. So the image remains unaltered, but unfortunately the prediction for the time delays does not remain unaltered. And if you try to measure H naught with this other setting, you obtain an H naught that is changed by this factor lambda with respect to the first model. Now, technically, this is an exact degeneracy, so lambda can be whatever you want, really. But of course, there are some things you can do in order to constrain this lambda. And one is coming whether you have some prior or what the mass of the galaxy lens is. Because this transformation, since you do this game, changes what you think the mass on the lens is, right? So if you have some prior, for example, coming from stellar kinematics, that tells you that this lambda cannot change dramatically, because otherwise you will arrive at masses that you think are reasonable, then you can hope to constrain. Unfortunately, this lambda coming, you can constrain from this stellar kinematics, but this, the uncertainty coming from stellar kinematics is of order 10%, hence this lambda can change of order 10% as well. So when TD Cosmo decide to describe things in a with a free mass model, what they do, basically, they insert this lambda by hand in their modeling. They insert this lambda, and the only thing they can use to constrain this lambda is coming from stellar kinematics. And hence, this explains why these error bars changed. But what is really this the physical interpretation of this degeneracy? Are these mass sheets really real? I mean, what does it even mean to have this? Well, unfortunately, yes. There are at least two examples that TD Cosmo 1 took into account of this mass sheet. And one example comes from large scale structures. Basically, we have before we had a very simplistic picture where you have just a gravitational lens on the middle that does the lensing. But of course, the light from coming from a source, when it comes all the way to the observer, goes also some large scale structure. So there is also these large scale structures have an effect, and the column density, the projected density coming from these large scale structures, they really behave when they projected on the lens plane as a mass sheet, because on the angular space, on the angles where you see the sky, this projected density doesn't really change. So it really behaves like a mass sheet. So this is a notable example of a mass sheet. That's something that they have to take into account, and they did in the Cosmo 1. Another example of a possible mass sheet comes from the fact that this elliptical galaxy we try to describe, they don't really live alone, but usually they belong to some group or some cluster. Here you have an example of a galaxy that was using the TD Cosmo collaboration, this PG system. You see here that this is like a multiple image system. Maybe you don't really see, but there are these blobs that tells you that it's a multiple image system. And these circled are all the various galaxies that are spectroscopically confirmed to belong to the same group. The fact that all these galaxies belong to the same group, it means that there is a dark matter halo, a bigger dark matter halo, different from the dark matter halo that resides on the galaxy itself. But we'll talk about the dark matter halo of the whole group or the whole cluster. And this dark matter halo, the density coming from this dark matter halo, when you zoom in on the galactic scale you're interested into, or lensing is interested into, again, really behaves as a mass sheet with certain correction that you have to take into account. But also this was taken into, kind of, taken into account in the TD Cosmo collaboration, in TD Cosmo 1, the one with the measurement with small error bars. What was not taken into account, however, is the possibility that this mass sheet actually happened in the dark matter halo of the galaxy itself. So not the dark matter halo coming from the group, not from the large scale structure, but really from a possible sheet, or as we will say, we'll see core profile coming from the galaxy itself that is used in order to measure H naught. And maybe you understood where I wanted to go on. This mass sheet is coming. Can want to discuss the possibility of whether this possible mass sheet will come from particular dynamics from fuzzy dark matter, in particular coming from these solitons. So can it be? Yes.
So mass sheets, you just mean the uncertainty in the mass distribution, any mass distribution that affects the timing delays. So
yes.
Small scale things, it could be large scale structure.
Yes.
It could be,
yeah. Okay. Yes. They all work in the same way. Of course, with different approximations. I mean, in the end, the exact machine degeneracy really talks about sheets that extend infinitely, right? So of course there will be like a correction coming from the fact that physically this sheet is not infinite, but will have a finite size. For example, for the large scale statue, maybe not, because maybe the approximation of infinite sheet maybe is really good. But for example, in the case of dark matter halo coming from the group, this mass sheet of course is not exact. There are also other corrections that sometimes if the centroid of the dark matter halo is really close to, kind of close to the galaxy where you look at the lens into, then you have to take into account other correction, which are called flexion and so on and so forth. But yes, when I say mass sheets, I mean any mass sheet, to be careful, that can add or remove contribution to the density profile. Like I say, also remove, like you would think that this contribution add, and in general is correct for dark matter. If we discuss about dark matter halos, this contribution adds. And also this translates into this lambda factor. If you add contribution, it translates in this lambda factor to be less than one. But you can also think about removing some mass sheet, and from the point of view of large-scale structure, this is definitely possible, because on the line of sight, you can have voids. For example, and this corresponds to removing a mass sheet. Yes.
This might just be a slightly different way of rephrasing the same question, but just to make sure, when you specify something that like behaves like a mass sheet, even if it's not, you know, matching the exact sort of infinite definition, is there some requirement on like how much variation in that mass distribution there is over sort of like the area of sky?
Yes. I will briefly discuss, but the short answer is yes. Of course, mass sheet is a mathematical degeneracy, but when you look at physical realization, you can have some correction coming from the mass sheet. Like the image that's in the sky technically is not really the same, but has some small correction. But if these corrections are small enough, so on and so forth, you don't see it. But yes, that's true.
You should change the terminology.
Why?
So it's confusing. I don't know. Call it the mass degeneracy.
No, because it really comes from this. I mean, the exact degeneracy comes really from this thing. But
mass degeneracy.
Okay. Fair enough. That makes sense. But yeah, is it clear for everybody? Any other question? So can it be that fuzzy dark matter, yeah, called ultra dark matter, okay, never mind. Fuzzy dark matter can be the cause of possible mass sheet degeneracy coming from in this internal dark matter profile of the same galaxy? Well, in order for the idea to work, as maybe was hinted, we have to make such that the core, that this core profile coming from the soliton is large enough. Why it has to be large enough? Because it has to be an approximate mass sheet degeneracy. And in particular, this core of the soliton should be somewhat bigger than the Einstein angle, which is the length scale of this gravitational lensing system. This is the typical distance between different images. Okay? So you have a different condition you have to impose to a possible soliton profile, so that it can yield a mass sheet degeneracy that can bias your H naught at the level of 10%, for example. And these conditions are these two. One, it's a condition coming from the fact that this mass sheet degeneracy is approximate, and you don't want to disturb the image at a level that is bigger than, let's say, 0.01 arcsec, which is usually the angular resolution this lensing collaboration are sensitive to. And the second, you want this soliton, if it's there, to be big enough so that the shift in H naught is appreciable. It's not 0.1%, but it's 3-4% or more. Okay? You can do this. You can work out the math as per the details. And the estimates that you arrive at to is that the mass that you need for this to work in order to have a massive enough core and big enough core so that this machine degeneracy is a good approximation, it has to be somewhat smaller or of the order of 10 to the minus 24 electron volts. And as you all well aware, I think, this is widely excluded by observation, right? By, for example, Lyman alpha observations, you have that anything like below 10 to the minus 21-ish electron volt cannot be the whole dark matter, but it can be some fraction. Also, coming from CMB and Lejeune scale structure, you see that fuzzy dark matter to this kind of range of masses cannot be the whole dark matter. But still, what is not excluded is the possibility of having fractions of ultra-light dark matter. Okay, and it just so happens that even if you have like fraction of the order of 10%, around 10% of ultra-light dark matter, of the subdominant, so fuzzy dark matter, with mass of the order of 10 to the minus 24, 10 to the minus 25. This estimate tells you that you still can form this kind of solitons that are big enough so that are good mass sheet degenerate, a good example of mass sheet degeneracy, and they're massive enough that can bias your measurement of H0 up to 10%. Yes.
Just to make sure I understand sort of the physical picture here of the soliton is, and this might be coming from some ignorance about how like the lens modeling usually is. Should we be picturing like a cold dark matter distribution with an additional soliton with it?
I was about to say this, but yes, yes. So for example, we can show like an explicit example of where we have, as you hinted, one, you have the stars component, something that you can see in the Usher model. Then you have like the dominant component of dark matter that you can model as Navarro Frank White, as a cold dark matter, as the TD Cosmo collaboration is doing. But then you can think about adding really a subdominant soliton on top of this picture. What you obtain, the profile in black, that is the sum of all this profile, is actually very close to the profile that you would obtain with just, if you rescale accordingly, okay. But with the profile that you obtain with just Navarro Frank White plus stars, minus maybe a possible correction that comes from this, from where the core becomes kind of the same density as the outer, let's say, Navarro Frank White. Anyway, this is an example where we have a mass of order 2 to the 10 to the minus 25 electron volt, I should write electron volt. Subdominant component of order 10% is mass of the soliton of the order 10 to the 12 solar masses, whereas the mass 200, the mass of the Navarro Frank White halo is more than 10 to the 13 solar masses. This resembles the parameters coming from a natural gravitational lens system. And these simple pictures is consistent with the imaging. It's consistent with everything, stellar kinematics, constraints coming from this rescaling of mass and so on and so forth, but it's enough to give a 10% shift in H0. So maybe this can be an explicit example, maybe, of what can go... Okay, yes. An explicit example of what can go wrong in this modeling and what does it mean to really have a free mass profile, okay? Nobody's saying that this is... actually correct, that this course exists. I will discuss again the implication of this course, if they can exist. But I want to stress the fact that the important message here is not that this thing can actually exist. Maybe they do not, probably they do not. But the important message is that really there is this degeneracy that you have to take into account. And this is just an explicit example. And then I say other things, and then I will have the question. And also I wanted to stress the fact that the moment you have an H0 prior, meaning the moment you stop caring about the H0 tension because maybe it was solved, then you can really use time delays at your advantage. Right now you're using time delays to try to measure H0, and unfortunately you encounter all this degeneracy, but the moment you actually also fix H0, you can use time delays to also constrain this kind of scenarios. And you can really try to probe some structure from density profile of galaxies that you would not be sensitive to otherwise. I think it's an important message. Yeah?
Maybe you deflected my question already, but I'll ask it anyway.
Okay.
It's kind of a dumb question, but like in this model, like soliton is not a dominant component of dark matter. Like, why is it in the middle of the halo?
Why is it in the middle of the halo?
Yeah. Why isn't it like a satellite around the halo?
Well, the soliton usually also in they form on the potential well of the profiles.
Okay.
And of course, you can you see also in the simulations, like the soliton can have, even when it's not a dominant component of the light dark matter, like the soliton can form, can have like kind of random walk behavior, it can have all these things. But in general, they expect it to form on the potential well of the halo. And notice that here we are discussing about really big beasts, like this core profile really of the order of 10 kiloparsec. Usually maybe in the literature we discuss about 10 to the minus 22, 10 to the minus 21, where you have parsec, like around parsec core radius. Here these things are really, so you know, fluffy, how do you say? they're really big and yes. But yeah, you expect them.
It's like, I don't know, it's like another dark matter halo. Dark matter halos don't all sit on, you know, all the subhalos in a bigger halo just don't sit in the middle. They're orbiting around, so, I don't know.
I mean, it's another component of a dark matter halo, and it's a consistent component of a dark matter halo that has possible influence on what you, on your measurement of H0, for example. Like, it's another component, but it's still sizable. It's not some sort of substructure of the order 10 to the 9 solar masses, for example. It's more than that, and it's more sizable.
Okay.
But yes. Okay. But yeah. But before, there are maybe two important questions that one can ask. One, is this... a realistic thing that can happen, meaning if some gravitational lensing campaign can really look at a system in the sky and tries to model with the wrong model or tries to model with ultra dark matter, where the true is actually the dark matter, would you really find the shift in H0, yes or no? Second question is maybe also related to the question that I just had, can also this big soliton actually form? Because of course, these solitons are a ground state of this ultra dark matter. It's not that they form like this, right? There's some time scales involved, and one should care about the fact that whether these things can actually exist in the time scale of the galaxy. For the first question, one can think about doing some mock. You can think about modeling a possible galaxy, also with time delays and everything, with a model that has similar to what we described before. So we have like a ultra dark matter component coming from the soliton and a Barrow Frank White component and stars. And then ask what a modeler, as an observer that observes this system as time delays and so on and so forth, what will conclude about H0 within different assumption. One assumption is whether an observer that looks at this system without knowing about this possibility of solitons, without knowing anything, it just fits with Navarro Frank White plus stars, let's say. Actually, what usually lensing collaboration do, they fit with power laws. And here, in fact, I show the parameters of these power laws, gamma and theta e. Usually, they actually fit with that. And if you fit such a system like this, then you see that the true H0 is actually 67. In this example, would be 67.4, which is this blue line. Then the H0 you will converge to is completely biased, as you expect, it's actually higher. An observer, instead, that is aware of the possibility that there is this ultra-light dark matter and tries to really to model this soliton, of course, what happens, you add in this triangle plot two other parameters for the soliton. Let's not care too much about those, but what you can care about is the fact that the measurement of H0 now is completely... not off, but with error bars that are huge because of this degeneracy. And in the end, these error bars are just regulated by the priors, if you want, on the parameters of the ultra-light dark matter. But I think it's also interesting a third case where you actually have a prior H-naught. You say, no, the H-naught tension, we solved it, and I know that H-naught is 67 what it is, or 73 what it is. And then you fix H-naught, and you can try to see what goes on. And of course, in this kind of systems, you can maybe see that you have some sort of detection of the possibility of this soliton is there. If you fix H-naught, you really see that in your modeling, for example, this lambda is different from zero. There's something that the time delays are telling you. So again, it's not I'm saying that solitons are actually there, but this maybe also proves again the fact that you can really use this time delays at your advantage the moment you know you assume a prior an H-naught. So this discussing about this degeneracy in gravitational lensing and the H-naught measurement is still interesting regardless of what you think about H-naught. It's real, it's not real, and so on and so forth. Yes?
It's basically my question, but let me add a follow-up question, which is that let's say I have 10 or 20 of these systems.
Sorry?
Let's say I have 10 or 20 of these systems. Ah. Yeah, so I measure these timing delays, and I mean, then could you turn it into a detection of the solitons? I mean, given a prior on H naught from other measurements, and I've got 20 of these things, so I can get some statistics.
Okay, I will. I will skip to the backup slides because I think maybe I can answer by looking at this. Now, this is a slide where I show the results from the TD Cosmo 4 collaboration, which are the results where you have this free mass profile, and when they say free, they actually mean that they have this this lambda factor, which is this lambda coming from the modeling that is completely free. And you have different measurement, and there's this measurement that I wanted to focus on, these two measurements, how they do obtain in the following way. They have like 7 gravitational lensing systems, the 7 that I showed before, which they have time delay for, and which you can use them to measure H-naught. But with this system, they add other gravitational lensing systems that they do not have time delays, so you cannot really measure H-naught. But if you, we can discuss about that, but if you assume they come from the same population, let's say these gravitational lensing systems are similar to the other gravitational lensing systems, then you can still use them to put some priors on the modeling of the galaxy, okay? And the moment they do that, you notice that the central value of H-naught shifts down. Now, is this significant? I mean, the error bars are still big, everything is still consistent, so it is significant, I don't know. But still, if you see what the lambda that they obtain, you see that, of course, as you expect, the lambda is kind of shifted towards values that are lower than 1, okay? Now, again, this lambda is still consistent with 1, okay, and so on and so forth. Sure. But this maybe proves the point that, yes, if you look at many systems, and maybe you look in a more careful way, I'm not saying that this is okay, it's careful, okay, there are caveats, blah, blah. But if you do it in a careful way, then the answer is yes. You can detect, not the soliton, but there is something going on in your modeling that is wrong. Yep. Which can be the soliton. It's an example. Maybe it's the most evil example you can think of, like really a cold profile that does this. But yeah, the answer is yes. I almost finished. Okay, this is finished. Yes, and the second question I say, the second maybe actually big caveat for this feature is can we actually form this very big soliton, or can we relax so much mass in the soliton? Are the time scales consistent? One zeroth order thing you can do is to try to look at the relaxation time formula that you can recover from kinetic theory that tells you what is the time scale for a soliton to relax given its mass, given its velocity dispersion, and given its density. Alpha chi here is the fraction of dark matter. In case the dark matter is just a fraction, you have to scale by this the fraction. Well, you try to use this formula, and then you obtain what are the time scales. You obtain, let's say, a bound on the maximum soliton that you can form. And in this plot, I showed in the parameter space mass of the soliton versus the mass of the ultralight dark matter given for particular lensing system with this thing. What all of this analysis says. Now, in the red shaded region, basically we have the parameter space, the soliton mass of the fuzzy dark matter particle. That is so-called excluded by imaging. What does it mean? That it means that a soliton with that mass and with that particle mass will just give you a mistake in the image that you see in the sky that is too big. Okay. Now, if a soliton lies on this blue band, in these blue bands, then the soliton is massive enough so that you can shift the H-naught coming from these systems back to the CMB value. This you can, as I said in the beginning, you can measure H-naught for single gravitational lens system. And if you have a soliton that is big enough so that you reach this blue band, then you actually put the value of H-naught back to the CMB value, for example. I mean, all this analysis is definitely not biased on what the H-naught tension is, of course not. And in this, instead, in this other colored band, we show what is the mass that the soliton can reach within the time scale coming from the galactic lifetime of the system. So, in particular here, if this ultralight fuzzy dark matter is 0.2% cosmological with respect to the cosmological dark matter, you can reach a soliton that lies on this band. If it's 0.1, it lies on this band. If it's 0.05, it lies on this band. Okay? So you see that this relaxation criterion, which is it okay, is it not, we can discuss, but represents a bottleneck for the whole idea. Because, for example, here you might be consistent for, you can form a soliton within the time scale of the galaxy if the fuzzy dark matter is over 0.1 or 0.2%. Here it's a little less clear, here it's a little even less clear. But I have to remark the fact that this analysis, especially regarding the imaging constraint, is really conservative, because here with the red shaded but not too dark, we showed that the part that is excluded by imaging, because this fuzzy dark matter is just a subnominal component, and then when you solve for the soliton equation, for example, you have to put the external potential coming from the dominant component, right? And this what does, it basically shrinks the core radius and makes the possibility to obtain a big core a little more difficult. So that's why the constraint become a little harsher. But this plot is obtained by using just a power law, external potential. And if you use a different external potential coming from a more realistic stars plus Navarro Frank White, or anyway a more realistic potential, this shrink of the core is less pronounced. In particular, with this green spot, I showed an example, which is the example I showed you before, that is actually completely fine with imaging, but it's a little more refined with stars and Navarro Frank White. And it lies on this, let's say, still this shaded band that naively will be excluded, but then it's not. So these are really conservative, but still, this tells us that this relaxation time is a bottleneck for this idea. But is this correct? Is this a way to treat subdominant fuzzy dark matter relaxing into a soliton with this formula actually correct? The answer is still unknown, but what I'm doing right now, what I'm working right now in a working process, I try to also simulate this system, like where you have subdominant fuzzy dark matter and then cold dark matter with a 3D pseudospectral cold for multiple phase Schrödinger equation. And it seems actually this relaxation bottleneck to not be really there, like really this soliton can actually form within the time scale of the galaxy, but it's still work in progress, so I'm not going to more on these words. But it seems that this idea at least it can work. Okay, do we have time? No. Okay, so let's go to the summary, and I can discuss the possibility that this mass sheet degeneracy of from the strong gravitational lensing might come from coarse soliton core of fuzzy dark matter, and giving an example of a mass sheet degeneracy that arises because of the dark matter halo of the galaxy itself, which is something that was not considered before. But unfortunately, to make this work, you have to look at a scenario where the fuzzy dark matter is just a fraction, because you have to look at mass ranges that are very low, order 10 to the minus 25. But even with order 0.1, 0.2 mass fraction, this idea seems to work, this soliton seems to form. And still, I think this, again, regardless of what you think about H0, this way of going is interesting. Because if this scenario is somewhat correct, like this relaxation time scales are somewhat correct, then you can really put constraints on this mass range, really, of the fraction of fuzzy dark matter with this mass range. Because if this in this scenario really form this soliton, then with time delays you can actually hope to see them, for example. So I still think this is a somewhat interesting way to look at things. I think I finished because I'm also out of time. Okay, thanks.
So, are there any further questions?
I'm curious. I'm wondering if there's a way to complement these constraints with observations of strong lensing systems that don't have time delay measurements, just from like lens models. Is that a question that?
Okay. What this course affects is also to a certain level stellar kinematics. For example, if you think that this, if you think this scenario is correct, it should be correct everywhere, right? It should be correct also on the Milky Way. And on the Milky Way, indeed, you can try to understand if this scenario is correct, if you think the soliton actually formed, by looking, for example, with Gaia, at the kinematics of star at the outskirts of our galaxy, like the size of the possible soliton with this scenario on the Milky Way should be of the order of not 100 kiloparsecs, but order 20, 30 kiloparsecs. So if you can really look at the, for example, at the outskirts of the Milky Way, for example, with Gaia, you can definitely say something about it. Whereas with when you look at the large ellipticals that are really far, which are the system that gravitational lensing cares about, that is, I think it's really hard. I mean, there are, in general, the stellar kinematics measurement for this system, it's just one. Measurement is just one number. There is some work coming also from the TD Cosmo collaboration where they try to do resolved kinematics of the system, meaning you have your system and you can have a number for the stellar kinematics for a single patch of your image, let's say. With very resolved, you can do it. And this is a way that this TD Cosmo collaboration is trying to pursue to put really constraint on this mass sheet degeneracy that is really the devil that. Makes this measurement so hard. But even with that, I will say this scenario for this massive ellipticals, you would need probably time delays to really settle them. Yeah.
I actually have a question. So it's related to other questions, and maybe you said it, but I didn't understand. When you want to use this technique to a bound on the fraction, say, the fraction plays the role only of like the height of the density, or like in a sense, or do you assume always that there is like a soliton, or like which, because like ideally maybe the system that you look for do not have like a soliton in the middle. So how can you say?
Yes. That's why this, let's say, relaxation estimate or this understanding the time scale of the formation of the soliton with this formation, if the soliton actually forms, is important. Like in the naive scenario, yes, the fraction will just regulate the height of the density. and how big the soliton is, but you, of course you're right. You have to look at whether the soliton actually forms and if this time scale are correct. And I will say if these time scales are even order of magnitude, one order of magnitude correct, then you will still have something, some sort of soliton. And if you really see nothing, then you can put bounds.
You understand fraction.
Yeah, definitely.
You expect to solid
5% fraction. I don't know, but because the shift in H not goes doesn't really go with the fraction, but. The scenario that I showed is easily can, if the time scale factors are correct, can go with 10% difference in H0. If you really assume like CMB to be correct, this 10% will be off. Okay? So it will be there. But yes, it relies on understanding if these time scales are at least one order of magnitude correct. If you cannot even say that one order of magnitude correct, then I agree, you cannot say anything.
So questions from Zoom?
But there's also a question.
Oh, sorry.
So how would I tell the difference between solitons and just like baryons? Actually,
baryons.
Come on, like in the middle. If we're talking 10% of the dark matter, well, we're basically talking.
Okay, be careful because the bet.
Yeah.
Okay, let's answer this.
No. So, how would I tell the difference?
You have to be a little careful because the baryons is what they basically dominate in the inner part. The soliton kind of goes a little above this inner part. This is a log plot, so don't be a little fooled by this fact that they look close. And so this is one thing, at least as far as baryons are concerned. But it's still an interesting point because one can think that, but baryons are not just stars, right, that they follow the light. There are also gas, right? And also this can form like this fluffy thing that can indeed contribute to this machine degeneracy. Now, as far as I can say, the gas cannot contribute to this order of magnitude. They cannot contribute to this level. Like the fraction of gas should be of the order of the soliton. I think this is not it's not possible, but if you have some reference or some ideas about
I don't really know where non-luminous baryons are.
They're pretty bulky, and
yes.
I think there are plots that include gas in that.
But that's definitely an interesting point. And everything goes into this machine degeneracy again. Yes.
Okay, so if there are no more questions, what's from Zoom, I guess. We can thank the speaker.